We're rapidly recording meanings given to experiences. That's what forms your perspectives about life. You might watch your parents struggle with money, so you might form a perspective, a belief that money must be hard to make. The moment you become aware of your programming and how you behave as a result of your programming, that's the first step, is the awareness.
83% of Americans identify as not very happy, which can hold you back and negatively affect your relationships and your business. On this podcast, we discuss the proven steps to happiness so you can restore balance and rekindle your joy.
Welcome to the How to Be Happier for Entrepreneurs podcast.
We have Dr. Eugene on today. He is a fascinating individual who spent many years studying the brain, and now he teaches people and executives how to increase their performance. So welcome, Dr. Eugene.
Thanks so much for having me, Brad. This is fun.
Oh, I cannot wait for this. There's so much stuff I'm going to get out of your beautiful brain. So you have studied a ton about the brain and a ton about neuroscience. What is the single biggest surprise that you learned in all this time?
Yeah, the biggest surprise I realized after looking at all the research is it turns out the part of your brain that has some of these amazing capabilities, we're talking critical thinking, creativity, innovation, empathy, we're not accessing it for around 70% of our adult life. Like, it's not on.
And I assume if we could access it, our productivity and our businesses and our life would be way better, right?
Skyrockets. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
All right. So you dropped the bomb. Like, us humans aren't accessing 70% of our brain. Why aren't we, and how the heck do we do it?
Yeah. So for a majority of our life, it's because the first thing that we need to understand is, very simply put, your brain turns out it operates in one of two states, like a certain state. Okay. So it's operating either in a state of what we call survival state, or it's operating in an executive state. So your executive state is where you're able to access these amazing things, remember, right? So the key thing is it's one or the other. When one is on, the other's off, and vice versa. Okay. So we have to understand, what is a survival state to begin with? It's what it sounds like. It's the part of your brain that's been helping you keep, stay alive all this time throughout the many centuries and millennium. So it's the part where when your life is actually in danger, you need to be in this state. The key quality of this state is a state where you're reacting without thinking. You see what I'm saying? Because if you start thinking and there's a tiger in front of you about to eat you, even spending that split second thinking, you might die.
You're dead.
So that's the key quality about a survival state, which is why you're not accessing these other parts of your brain. Your empathy's not turned on, right? You're not sitting there going, I wonder how this tiger is doing today. Is his parents treating him? Your empathy's turned off. It's self-preservation mode. This is why you need to react without thinking, because of that moment where you might be able to die. You need your body and your brain to do that. So you're not able to think. Remember, you're reacting without thinking, right? So your critical thinking skills are turned off. So this is the surprising part, is like, why is it turned off for a majority of our adult life, where we're not able to access the executive state? So this is where you experience some amazing experiences. We dance between the both, by the way, right? Why does this happen? We're not literally in danger physically for a majority of our adult life, right? You don't have a gun pointed to your head every day. You don't have someone running a tiger that's trying to eat you every day. It's because we're surviving from feelings that don't feel good. So you have to ask yourself, how often do you feel anxious every day? How often do you feel stressed, frustrated, rushed, pressured, with all the expectations and pressure we experience on a daily basis? And your brain literally perceives these feelings as a life-threatening scenario. Why? Research has shown that emotional pain can feel just as painful as physical pain. So your brain's busy trying to survive from these feelings, if that makes sense. So that's why for a majority of our adult life, we're in that survival state, because your brain's surviving from all that stress.
And is the stress, I found the stress, typically people think it's the day-to-day stress as a 40-year-old or a 30-year-old or a 50-year-old, mm-hmm. but the stress is really from years prior in their programming as a child, right?
Exactly.
But we don't know that because our subconscious mind is dominating us and we don't access our subconscious mind for the most
part. Yeah, you're going deep into the rabbit hole on that one, right? So it's like, we think 70,000 thoughts a day, 90 to 95% of those thoughts, same thoughts every day, okay? A lot of these thoughts are a negative thought about yourself. So it doesn't feel good. Boom, you're in survival. In addition to that, we carry, just like you don't walk down the stairs going, I need to put my left foot forward, my right foot. We don't do that anymore. Your body's able to do it without thinking. So guess what? Whatever beliefs we formed in that brain of ours, the perspectives we carry, the thinking, the repetitive thinking, the beliefs are on autopilot as well. So imagine you got bit by a dog at 4 years old. Now you form a perspective that all dogs must be dangerous. And you think that thought over and over again. At some point, it's going to do it without you thinking anymore. You just become so good at it. So this is where like a lot of the programming comes in. And that's why these habits we carry, it's hard to break out of them because your brain and body have gotten so good at it. It does it without you telling it to do it. So that's one of the key things to understand is that at the end of the day, we get programmed to feel certain ways, to think certain thoughts because of your unique life experiences. You're spot on with that. And it usually stems from childhood.
And here's the best thing. I mean, you know this as well as anyone. Our brain is always doing its job, right? When we come up with these beliefs, they're just coping mechanisms to get us through that bad situation. Because as a six-year-old, if something bad happens to you, why is it happening to you? Your brain is like, you're bad. It's rationalizing, right? But the example you gave about the dog bite, our subconscious mind doesn't know time because it doesn't want you to know time because it wants to remember at 4 years old, that dog is dangerous. And if you're at 44 years old, you don't want to forget that dog, right? So we create these programs, these thoughts, these false beliefs in our head to get us through that trauma. And until we do the work, we don't know the difference between if we're 4 or 44. Can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, absolutely. Think about this. When you're born, you have 100 billion brain cells, okay? You're born with 100 billion brain cells on average. You only have 20 billion connections between those brain cells. So this is why we don't know how to do much as a baby, right? You don't know how to walk. You don't know how to talk, all that good stuff. But by the time you're 7 years old, you still have those same 100 billion brain cells. But guess what? Now there's a quadrillion connections between those brain cells. That's 15 zeros, in case you want to imagine out how big that number is. So what's happened between 0 to 7 is we literally record information very rapidly. There's literal information we record, such as this is the color white, this is the color black. It's factual information. But what most people don't realize is we're rapidly recording meanings given to experiences as well. That's what forms your perspectives about life. You might watch your parents struggle with money. So you might form a perspective, a belief that money must be hard to make. You watch your parents struggle with relationships. You might form a belief relationships must be really hard. And we program that at such a young age that it becomes natural for us as we continue to grow up, where your brain perceives it as a perspective to keep you safe. And that becomes your nature. You see what I'm saying? And now it becomes your world, your reality. And your brain is doing its job by trying to help you survive. So for example, that's the thing too. It's just like the moment you become aware of your programming and how you behave as a result of your programming, that's the first step is the awareness. Because a lot of times we just can't see the stuff.
Can't see it.
We just can't see it. You can't change what you can't see. So I always use this example. If you have a piece of broccoli stuck between your teeth, how do you have the power to remove it unless it comes into your awareness? Someone has to point it out to you or love you see it in the mirror. Now you have the power to remove it. The same applies to your own programming, your behaviors you carry, your beliefs. A lot of these are not real. They're not true, right? All dogs aren't dangerous. Yet we carry beliefs like that. We live in a hostile universe, a hostile world, right? Life sucks. I'm all alone. I'm not good enough. We carry all of these realities that aren't real. But for a lot of us, it feels so real, it's hard to break out of it, which is why the first thing has to be awareness. Like you need to be able to see what's actually happening. Otherwise, you stay stuck in the pattern.
Yeah, for 47 years of my life, Dr. Eugene, as you know, I wasn't aware. And if you'd have asked me 2 years ago, hey, are you happy? I was happy. I would have said I was happy. Do you love yourself? Yeah. Do you care about what other people think? No. Well, the last two were untrue. Like I didn't truly love myself. And I really did care about what other people thought because I didn't think I was enough. So yeah, the awareness is everything.
Yeah. And what I realize about the science is it's so empowering. It creates a language for us to bring awareness to certain things. So here's what I mean. When you're in the wild and you're in front of a life-threatening scenario where there might be an animal ready to attack you, your survival state only knows how to do one of three reactions: fight, flight, freeze. That's it. And it's very obvious when it's a life-threatening scenario what that looks like. You're going to try to defend yourself and fight. Maybe you pick up a weapon, right? Or maybe you're trying to hit the animal or something. Or you're going to run for your life and flight. And then there's freeze, which is playing dead. So opossums are great at doing this because their predators like their food alive. So when you're paralyzed in fear, you freeze. You see what I'm saying? It's a survival mechanism. There's a reason for it. Now, what most people aren't aware of is if we're in the survival mode for about 70% of our adult life, at the least, I have a lot of people say it's way more than that. But anyway, at the least for 70% of our adult life, that means you're actually fight, flight, freezing for a majority of your life. We just don't know what it looks like. So for example, what does fight look like in when it comes to emotional survival? You're surviving from stress, surviving from frustration, anger. The more obvious ones is things like when you're getting into an actual fight. If you've ever been in an argument, anyone who's been in a relationship has experienced arguments and your feelings get hurt. So now you feel hurt and now you feel the need to survive by fighting back. And remember, empathy's turned off when you're in fight. So we all know where that usually ends up. No one's listening to each other. It's just a lot of attacking and defending that happens and someone gets hurt because you're attacking the other person. So those are more obvious ones of fight. Or road rage is another easy example, right? The person got cut off, their ego got hurt. So they feel the need to survive by fighting back, by trying to cut the other person back off. And because there's no empathy, you have no consideration for the other cars you might be putting in danger with the behavior of aggressive driving. So where this became eye-opening for me is the more subtle fight, flight, freeze responses. What are more subtle ones? The need to be right is a fight response, by the way. Why? Because at some point in your life, you got shamed or you got embarrassed because you didn't know something and someone shamed you for it. For example, perfectionism is a fight response. The need to be perfect, even though it's impossible. It's usually a reflection of a belief you have about yourself that I don't accept myself the way I am. I'm not good enough. I'm not performing good enough. I'm not capable enough. Overworking is a fight response. The need to prove yourself. Why would you need to prove yourself unless what you already believe about yourself is that you're not enough, you're not worthy, you're not lovable, you're not accepted.
And those are all untruths.
Those are all untruths. And we fight on a daily basis without even realizing it. So I emphasize the fight response a lot because this was the very insidious one. This was the one where a lot of people don't become aware of until way later in their life. And I give examples of this. I had a client once in his 60s and he's asking me like, why am I still so unhappy? Why am I still not feeling fulfilled? Why am I still experiencing so much anxiety? I can't get out of this no matter what I accomplish. He's fighting his whole life. And he realized when I expect the fight, flight, freeze response, he's sitting there going, I've been fighting for my whole life. And I asked, I was just like, oh yeah, what are you seeing? He's like, well, I've been fighting to prove to the world, to everyone around me, that I'm better than my older brother, who happened to be an NFL football player. My football coach in high school told me, don't bother trying. You're never going to be as good as him. So he spent his whole life fighting, accomplishing more, making more money. And the fight response always leads to burnout and a lack of fulfillment. You see what I'm saying? Because you're still surviving.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw a tough one at you here.
Yeah.
When a child is being sexually assaulted, their natural reaction is to fight or flight, right? Well, they can't do that because that could bring on worse things for them. So what does that do to them as an adult if they've suppressed those two things that their body was made to do to help them survive?
They usually don't take action. They're more of a freeze response is a common one. So the subtle ones for freeze, the easy ones is like you just don't take action, or if you get caught in a lie, you freeze. You ever see that? But the funny part about that is you're clearly guilty, right? When you get caught in a lie and you're freezing. But part of the freeze response is when you experience things like trauma, you dissociate. Things like rape. This is why if you ever hear that argument, why didn't you do something about it? When people experience trauma, one of the things is to freeze and they dissociate themselves from the current moment because of the shock and the trauma. So with kids, if you're experiencing some sort of assault like that and you feel so paralyzed, like you can't do anything, you tend to live your life thinking like that. Like, I can't accomplish this. I can't do it. I'm stuck here. I'm cornered. So you won't take action, right? You get paralyzed in fear. Does that help answer the question? It tends to be a lot of freezing happening in those scenarios where you feel very disempowered.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't understand their trauma. They suppress the memory. So 40 years old, sometimes 30 years old, they just wake up and they're like, oh my God, this terrible thing happened to me. And again, they repressed it, but it never left their body. So their body and their brain.
Correct. Their body always remembers it.
Yeah. Always remembers all the way back into the last trimester, which is something that I learned in these last 2 years. That was a shocker to me that you actually start forming a memory in the last trimester. So if there's something that happened in the last trimester that was stressful, that could be carried with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, your body is the first thing to process information. Think about this. We have our five senses. Your body is the first thing to remember everything, because imagine you're walking down a road and you see a snake in the corner of your eye. You don't take a moment to go, hey, jump. Your body just does it without you telling, because your body is very rapidly sensing and that it's doing its job. And you're right. That's why we tend to remember those things from the past, even though we're not consciously aware of it, because it's that programming kicking in. You need the fight, flight, freeze when your life is actually in danger.
So I teach my clients something that I find really interesting. And I didn't know the science behind it until you taught me a couple of weeks ago by listening to a podcast. And what I teach my clients is that anytime that you have a negative emotion in your body, your mind and your body is amazing. It has like built-in alarm systems, right? So if you have a headache or you have a fever, it's your way of your body saying, hey, something's wrong. So if you have a negative emotion, it's the same thing. Something isn't right in your body. So it's an opportunity to grow. It's an opportunity to learn something. So what I tell my clients is if their spouse or whoever does something that causes a negative emotion, I want them to pause and not react, not like the snake, actually pause and don't react. Label the emotion, like identify the emotion. I am feeling. Yep. So you bring awareness to the feeling. And I say you give compassion for the feeling, because most of us as children didn't get that opportunity to have compassion for our feelings. And that's why we have so much depression and anxiety. And then the next step is to try to figure out where it came from. And then to talk about with your spouse, rather than saying, hey, you pissed me off. Say, listen, you just did something. that encountered a reaction in me, it's not your fault, because it really isn't their fault. If you're feeling something negative, it's something inside of you. And that's a really, really hard concept for most people to understand. Yes. But if you want to live a happy life and you want to live a happy relationship, you've got to understand this. No one outside of you can make you pissed off. They can hurt you if they physically assault you, but they cannot make you do anything. No one can break your heart. No one can make you hurt your feelings. No one can disrespect you even. If anyone's disrespecting you, you're disrespecting yourself. So that's what I do, and it works wonders. But until I heard your podcast the other day of why this works, you take it from here. Why does pausing and labeling the emotion work so well with the brain and the body?
Well, number one, yeah, it's just bringing awareness, because this is all about awareness. So you're becoming aware of what you're actually feeling so that you stop reacting to it. So what happens in the brain is the moment you label a feeling, saying, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling anxious, I'm feeling frustrated, you're actually turning on your executive state brain. Why is this? It's because, remember, when you are in a reactive survival state, you literally can't think. So when the moment you label something, you have to think about it for a moment, don't you? So you have to get out of survival for a moment, even though you're labeling it. So there's actual studies done that proven this, right? So UCLA did that study. I think that's the one you're referring to, where they would show people's faces in survival, anxiety, frustration. And the brain scans immediately picked up the survival state brain turning on when they saw that emotion, right? Your mirror neurons are turning on and sensing
it. So they would show pictures to the participants of someone Correct. In a triggered state, a sad, upset, or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then the moment the researcher asked the participant, can you tell me what emotion you're seeing on this picture? And they labeled it. Go, oh, that's anxiety, that's frustration, that's anger. They watched on the scans, their survival state brain turned off and their executive state brain turned on. Remember, you can only be one or the other, the state that you're in. So even if it's just simply naming the emotion, you can do this anytime. You don't have to do it out loud. You could do it in your own mind too. Just bring attention to it. You're calling on your executive state brain to turn on, because that's your prefrontal cortex right behind your forehead. And that's where your emotional regulation skills come from, to regulate your emotions and just labeling it. A clinical psychologist friend of mine always gave me a subtle yet important distinction, which is there's a difference between I am sad and I feel sad. So when you say I am, you're presuming it's your identity. I am Eugene. I am sadness. I am sad. I am angry. So that keeps you in the survival state more prolonged, in a more prolonged state, versus when you're acknowledging it's a feeling. We understand feelings aren't permanent. Feelings come and go, because, well, feelings come and go. Sometimes we're sad, sometimes we're happy, sometimes we're angry. And it's to be able to acknowledge that you're helping yourself regulate. That's a quick, easy thing to do to help yourself regulate so that you can activate that executive state.
Fascinating. So I don't know if you broke up for our listeners, but you broke up a little bit for me. So I just want to highlight what you said. When you feel that upset, a lot of times you're in that triggered state. You're in that survival state. The second that you label the emotion and you label it by saying, I am feeling, because you don't want to say I am, because when you say I am, you are making an identity of yourself and that can last forever, Correct. Right? A feeling comes and goes. So you say, I am feeling. And what that does in your brain is it forces you to think, which takes you out of the survival brain, the amygdala, and puts you into the thinking brain, the executive. So Yep. right off the bat, doing that little hack, you can completely bring yourself out of a really crappy mood or feeling, right?
Exactly. And this is important. This is why in coaching space, a lot of coaches have questions. They ask you questions, because when you get asked the question, you have to think about the answer. You see what I'm saying? So that's why just curiosity, labeling, just bringing attention to these things help you regulate. So yeah, it's a tool I recommend to everyone, to just label your feelings on a daily basis. Some clients even print out those, if you've ever seen those wheel of emotions, they print that out to just have by their desk so that they can just constantly pay attention to how they're feeling and label it.
So this is fantastic stuff, Dr. Eugene. All right, so you spend your days helping executives perform at a higher level.
Correct.
So I want you to tell us, what are some of the main things, besides the things that we just talked about, actionable things that our listeners can actually take to become more productive when you become happier? They kind of go hand in hand, right? So tell us some of the things that you do with your clients that help them find this extra productivity and happiness.
Yes. So the first step is always awareness. So that's why one of the key things I have clients do all the time is just get really good at identifying the fight, flight, freeze response. You see what I'm saying? So fight response, do you have a need to be right all the time? Are you overworking? Are you fleeing to your work? Some people bury themselves in their work as a flight response to avoid the emotion that they don't want to feel. And that's where the family breaks apart and stuff like that happens. Procrastination is another flight response. Freeze response, how often do you wake up in the morning and not take action because you feel overwhelmed or whichever? Just getting really good at identifying that so that in your daily life, you can see how much survival is actually around us. Oh, there's that person that got upset and he's lost his mind and he's trying to cut that other person back off. Oh, he's clearly fighting right now to try to fight back. So when you become aware of that, then you're ready to enter into the next phase. So the first process I always bring a client through is just that awareness exercise. And it creates a similar language without judgment now. It's just like, oh, the other day my partner said this and I got really pissed off and I ended up in a fight mode where I fleed by giving her the cold shoulder. You see what I'm saying? Like, it just creates a great language to bring awareness around it of our behavior without judging ourselves. So once you become aware of that, the next thing is just training. So remember, your brains get programmed to go on autopilot, to think the same thoughts, to behave the same way, have the same habits. So when it comes to performance, things like anxiety, overwhelm, procrastination that tend to hinder it, it's to be able to look at it from a way where, look, you're just programmed that way. It's not because you're stupid. It's not because you're an idiot. You just got programmed a certain way because of your life experiences. Well, the good news is the science shows you how to reprogram some of these things that aren't serving you anymore. So that's where training comes in. And that's what I do with clients is I teach them some of the science. I do coaching. I utilize technology. There's actual technology that can give you metrics on what state your brain and body is in. And I implement all of these things to help create these results. And then the last part of the process is implementation. You implement what you learn, you get to experience the benefits. Imagine you get to reprogram your brain to feel more happy. It's as simple as that. Instead of feeling stressed all the time, because your body got programmed to feel stressed all the time as a survival mechanism, to always be looking over your shoulder because of all the experiences you've had. So it's just the skill of rewiring and reprogramming yourself. And that's something that can be taught. And that's what I do with the leaders is I show them the science behind that. If you wanted like a takeaway from it, I can give like the two important steps to be able to get yourself ready for training to actually experience results. We can go into that too if you want.
Let's do it.
There's a saying in the book, Art of War, preparation wins the war. So I think one of the things that we experience a lot is like, just tell me what to do. Guru number one, guru number two. And they're like, you should meditate more. You should practice gratitude more. And they try it and it doesn't work. Our programming still always wins. We're still suffering. We're still anxious. So I realized, because I was so done with the personal development space. You know what I mean? Like, you get all hyped up, you go home and you're at your same environment and then your programming kicks in and now you're back to your old self. I was tired of that experience. I was just like, how do you actually change this? I realized there's two things that you have to prepare. If you truly want to improve your performance, if you truly want to activate this executive state and you actually want to experience for yourself how amazing life feels when you're there, the first thing is something I call willingness. And I have to give context here. So I once got to get trained briefly by this amazing coach. Her name's Rhonda Britton. And I have to give you context of her story because this was what was transforming me. I have to share the story about what I mean by willingness. At 14 years old, she was going out for Father's Day brunch and she's going out the yard. Her dad's coming to pick them up because they're in the middle of splitting up. So dad pulls up to the curb. She's walking out with her mom on the yard while her sisters are still inside the house getting ready. Dad comes out of the car after he parks, heads to the trunk, says he needs to get his coat, doesn't grab a coat. He grabs a shotgun instead, walks over to mom, pointing at her, really upset, yelling at her, blaming her, and then proceeds to shoot her. He then points the gun to Rhonda. Rhonda's frozen, freeze response. Mom's still alive, so she's yelling and fighting to tell dad not to do it. Dad didn't know mom was still alive, so he points the gun back at mom one more time, shoots her a second time, looks over at Rhonda, points the gun at himself, pulls the trigger. 14 years old, this happened to Rhonda. Sole witness of a murder-suicide that happened to be her parents. Major trauma, major survival mode. How did she survive? Fight, flight, freeze. How did she fight? She kept her grades up. She thought, maybe if I keep performing and accomplishing more, this pain will go away. So she was a straight A student. How did she flee? She fled to alcohol. She became an alcoholic. And she tried to commit suicide 3 times. That's an ultimate form of a flight response, by the way, right? And how did she freeze? Plenty of days in the morning, she woke up, did not want to get out of bed. Inaction. She did not take action. Yet one day she turned her life around. She became this amazing, amazing life coach. Became so popular, in fact, that she ended up with her own television show in the 90s that won an Emmy Award. Wow. And she's been on Oprah not once, but twice.
Wow.
So I share her story because she said these words that had such a deep impact on me, which was, until you're willing to be wrong about everything you know, nothing will ever change. And I'm highlighting the word willingness. I'm not here to say everything you know is wrong. I'm highlighting the word willingness because Rhonda was willing to be wrong about things that felt so real, that life sucks, that she's all alone, that she's not supported, she can't get anywhere. Whatever kind of belief, limiting false belief that might have been created by this moment, by her own interpretation of life, she was willing to be wrong about it. And that's the very thing that turned the life around. So it's a question I often ask, what if that thinking that you have, that you can't do this, you're not capable, you're not smart enough, you're not good enough. What if that was wrong? Are you willing to be wrong? Because guess what? Your brain is so easily fooled into what's real. How do you know this? You ever been in a dream and you thought it was real when you're in it?
Yeah, I mean, most people that are suffering have taken these false suggestions, the wrong suggestions, and now they just have to suggest new things to their brain.
Exactly. You need to be able to see what's actually not real. You need to be willing to be wrong about it, because people who are not willing, they just keep holding on to that core belief that was never real. So until your willingness is there, the change won't happen. So that's the first way to prepare, is just, that's where, like, you know, you want to come in with an open mind and be willing to be wrong about what feels so real to you. And because your brain literally is very easily fooled into what it thinks is real. So the second thing is what you were addressing earlier a little bit, where we have to understand what ownership really means. Because the second thing is to take full ownership. So what does this look like? I used to say this phrase to my daughter when she was 3 years old. I would say, "You're making me so mad," whenever she wouldn't listen to me. And now that I do all this brain work, I'm sitting there. I had to kind of like eat my own advice in that moment and try to reflect. And I'm sitting there going, man, I understand that she's not the cause of my emotions. And to really hold me accountable, I was sitting and reflecting, going, well, how might a little girl interpret my words? Because this is what happens in traumas, right? We misinterpret the experience and attach a meaning to the experience. I'm like, well, she's being told she's making daddy mad. So for her, it feels real that she's the cause of my emotion. Like, I'm telling her, you're causing my emotion. So now in her mind, that gets programmed as a reality, correct? And secondly, whoa, daddy's mad, and that feels scary. It feels really scary. So therefore, when daddy's mad, it feels like he doesn't love me. Which scientifically it's true, because when you're mad, you're actually disconnecting. You're not empathetic. You're not capable of empathy. When you're mad, you're actually disconnecting from the person that you're mad at. Anyway, so I'm sitting there going, man, so she might develop a fear of making people mad. I'm sitting there going, how might this impact her as an adult? What if she has the unethical boss one day that overworks her? And because she's afraid of making the boss mad, people pleasing is a survival mechanism too, by the way, saying yes to things that you don't want to say yes to and you don't hold boundaries because of your fears. So because she's afraid of making me mad or making the boss mad, she'll give in even though it's sacrificing her mental health and probably her physical health too. You know what really lit a fire under my butt? I'm sitting there going, oh my God, what if she ends up in a relationship one day, maybe with a boy, and the boy's trying to pressure her to sleep with him and she doesn't want to? Because she's afraid of making the boy mad, she'll give in even though she doesn't want to. She won't hold her boundaries. That one got me right off my butt. Give my daughter the biggest hug and tell her, like, baby girl, you can never make daddy mad. You can never make anyone mad. The only reason daddy was mad was because of his own fear. I apologize. That's my fault. That's my fault. This has nothing to do with you. Because I understood that the only reason I got mad was because when I was a teenager, my father left behind the family. And I used to think very angry thoughts. Like, if I'm ever a dad, I'm never going to be a shitty dad like him. So what's my brain doing when my daughter's not listening to me? Hey, you're being a bad dad now, just like your dad. So fight, flight, freeze. In that moment, I fight. I try to yell at her, control her. You see what I'm saying? That's why I got angry. Yeah. Whereas some other parent might have never got. So number one, I had to teach her how to set boundaries. I'm like, if daddy or mommy ever yells at you, you have every right to say and request, please stop yelling at me. And number two, what is ownership? Ownership, I shifted my language. Instead of saying, you're making me mad, you just shifted, I'm feeling so bad. That's ownership. You know why I share that?
Yeah. If you only remember one thing from this entire podcast, it's what he just said. No one can make you mad. Do you know how many people walk around this earth in a triggered state because they look at other people and they're like, they're pissing me off? No, they're not pissing you off. It's something inside you that is driving that pissed offness. And guess what? It can be fixed. You don't have to walk around in this suffering state all the time. Everything you need to be happy, you have inside you right now. You just need to access it. And why you have been able to access it, it's because these filters have been up from your trauma. And he mentioned that terrible event that happened to his coach, right? Some people will listen to that and be like, well, I didn't have that, so I shouldn't be screwed up. There's such things as big trauma and little trauma. You could have the feeling that your mother liked your little sister more, and that could create all kinds of issues in your life. So it doesn't do you any good to sit here and try to compare yourselves in terms of the level of trauma. It doesn't matter. The brain doesn't work that way. It just has to be that your childhood needs weren't met. You developed coping mechanisms, and they have negatively affected your life. And I've tried everything. I've gone to therapy. Well, you haven't tried everything. You haven't talked to Dr. Eugene. You haven't talked to me. There are specific ways that you can be healed and you don't have to go around this life suffering, I promise.
100%. And that was the big breakthrough for me, man. It's just like, do you know you literally create your own emotions? So I love sharing that story because now when I look at a CEO and they're like, my team's pissing me off, I share that story about my daughter. I'm like, tell me again, is it your team that's pissing you off? And they're able to acknowledge, no, I have something to do with this as well. So number one, if you want to understand why that happens, is imagine you go into a dark forest and you hear a scary noise. and you're going to go into survival because you might be under threat there. What your brain does in survival is it focuses on external information, information outside of you. You see what I'm saying? Where the threat would be. But the illusion our brain tricks us into is because it still survives from emotions, it can't help but focus on the outside. So this is why the experience feels like, oh, I'm feeling so upset right now because this thing outside of me happened, because you said this, you did that, or that person did this, or this thing in my life. That's why I feel upset. It's just simply your brain survival mode is focusing on the outside world. So you think you have to change the things on the outside to feel better on the inside, right? Whether it's the relationship, the money, or whatever, the status. But it's the skill of understanding that whenever you feel a feeling, because it comes from inside, you're just exercising your attention to go inwards. You're fighting from something. You're running from something. You're freezing from something based on an event that happened to you and the interpretation you gave that event. So we have to exercise this ability to just look inwards, because you know what? Neurologically speaking, you literally create your emotions. You literally create your emotions. If I had a brain scan to your head and you think a thought, you know what's happening? You would see electrical activity happening in your brain, because we conduct electricity. You know what's happening between those brain cells, those neurons in your body? It's releasing chemicals. They're called neurotransmitters and neuropeptides. And it makes its way down very rapidly to your body. It hits your hormonal centers and your hormones are releasing chemicals. And now you're feeling a feeling. You know how you can prove to yourself that you create your emotions? Have you ever had a moment in your life where you're thinking happy thoughts and you all of a sudden you feel happy, or you're thinking sad thoughts and all of a sudden you're feeling sad, even though nothing is changing around you? How do we have that ability? You literally have the ability to create your emotions.
Yeah, so it becomes a question. To change your emotions and to change your state.
Exactly. Exactly.
Dr. Eugene, that was, as always, that was like more fascinating than I thought. Your knowledge on the subject is amazing. I know you have this incredible free training at destinyhacks.co. So if you guys want to check that out, go there. You can reach him through there. If you need to reach me for anything, bradchandler.com/contact. If you like this How to Be Happy podcast, please rate, review, subscribe, and follow me. And if you'd like, share it as well. And we will be back for more and more amazing episodes. Dr. Eugene, that was amazing. Thank you so much.
That was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.
Hit subscribe if you don't want to miss out on more life-changing content. And if you're struggling, you don't have to. Go to bradchandler.com/contact. There, you can join the Facebook community of like-minded entrepreneurs, and you'll see a button to schedule your freedom and happiness call. See you on the next episode.